My name is Saskia. I've got over a decade of experience in running a small business in the needlecraft industry. I'm obsessed with the healing magic of crafting and the power of community. Dreaming big about a world where we rely on value-based businesses, the kindness economy, and where we can fully say, fuck fast fashion. A Smaller Life aims to inspire you to look at your wardrobe differently. Where do you buy? How do you use your clothes? And can you make some of it yourself? We learn from experts in the needlecraft, textile, and creative industry, big names and small, about what it's actually like to run a small business. I'm educated in marketing and photography and learn to do everything else on the job. Selling, pattern and product design, teaching, and running a needlecraft school. As a small business owner, you're in charge of everything. Branding, marketing, selling, promoting, and cleaning the loo. Emotional talks with sellers about wins and woes, product and design, conscious decision making, why we do it, how we do it, and what we need to become the future of fashion without burning the hell out. And I'm determined to lift our scene up for the world to notice so they can step away from fast fashion. A few weeks ago, Zoe invited me to help her out with her yarn choice for a new project she started. Being the conscious crafter that she is, she wanted to do it right from the get-go. It was a fiery and fast episode for her podcast, Check Your Threads, episode 66, if you are interested, I think. And I decided I could use some help myself. So today we are turning the sewing table and I'll be talking to Zoe about my sewing plans and projects and get her expert experience on how to choose the best fabrics for a more sustainable animal and people-friendly sewing practice. I hope you'll take away some inspiring information from our talk. And while we're on the topic, if you've been inspired and have gotten some value from the podcast, please consider becoming a patron. This allows A Smaller Life to grow and reach a wider audience so that more people can be inspired to look at their wardrobe in a different way and more small businesses can be supported in the good work they do. Practically, it means that I can offer better quality, pay the editor and myself for our work, and make the podcast more accessible for a wider audience by making more comprehensive show notes and transcripts that actually make sense. But now, let's hear from Zoe.
Hello, how are you?
Hello, I'm good. I'm a little bit cold. Yes. Because I have my really chunky sweater behind me, but I'm not wearing it. And also the sun is really shining in my face. So yeah. I think the sun was listening when I just said that.
It's like she's cold, quick.
How are you?
Good, cold. I've got many, many layers on. I've got a blanket on my lap and I've got like a kind of electric space heater thing next to my bum.
I love the color coordination that you've going on. This is kind of my palette. I see a little bit of a orangey red, mustardy yellow, emerald green, yeah, and then some black and white. What is it? Panther.
Yeah.
Panther print. It's a really good look.
Oh, thank you. It's just all the things.
So you're here to talk to me about how I can start my sewing practice off from the get-go on the right foot and make some more sustainable choices when I go shop for or maybe not shop at all for fabrics. So should I just tell you where I'm at in my sewing journey first of all?
Yeah.
Okay. I have sewn garments or altered garments for as long as I can remember. Maybe a little bit after, for as long as I, but I think at least from 6 years old or something, I've been playing with needle and threads. And then when I wanted to go to art school, I wanted to become a fashion designer. And I would have like photo sessions, like fashion photo shoots of me wearing the most particular outfits. I had no training except for my granny that helped me with some basic stitches and stuff. My mom had a sewing machine. I would basically battle the sewing machine a lot. And I only recently learned why I was always so frustrated, because I would get these nests of yarn on the bottom of my fabric, because apparently you have to always put the needle up when you take out your fabric?
Well, there's a lot
obviously, but all the way up. Good.
Yes.
Sorry. Yeah. So yeah, there's that. And then I did a bit of sewing here and there, but never really got taught well how to do it. And then I think it's now almost, I think about 15 years ago that I did a basic course with a lovely lady that is actually now again my teacher. And from there on, I was so focused on knitting and my business that I never really, really got into it. But as I've set myself the goal to make my whole wardrobe or curate or collect, like my whole wardrobe, the dream is to have a wardrobe that's consciously put together in any shape or form. And because my shape and form is quite luscious, I'm a big lady, I have the opportunity to use sewing as a tool to get closer to what I love and what I want. So that's where I'm now taking lessons with Caroline Vogel, who's in Rotterdam. If you're in Rotterdam, you can check her out. She's lovely. She's very experienced and especially fun to have as a teacher. But I also have you as my friend and expert. And I wanted to know more about the sustainability side of things. What I did was within the online community that I host, we did something that's called a closet cleanup. Mm-hmm. So we took out all of our clothes, had a good look at them. I put them all on my body. I made a little video. Not everybody did that. I'm really, really serious when it comes to these things. I put them all on my body. I figured out what kind of shapes I liked on me. I let things go. I said thank you, KonMari style, to them. And I looked at all the things that still sparkle joy and all of that. Then I actually made an episode about this, but I don't know which one right now. I'll link in the show notes.
Yeah, no, it was great. I loved it.
You did? Oh, cool. Awesome. And then I kind of made this notebook that describes the whole step-by-step thing. So I'll probably do something with that in the future. I know that I don't go to a lot of parties, so I don't need a lot of party clothes. I need comfortable clothes that make me feel good, that look good on me, and also that fit my style. Because even though that I work from home, I do get out in the world sometimes. And I really like to kind of show people that you can look really good and fun and make the right decisions. So first of all, next on my list for things to make are stretchy things like t-shirts and leggings and the basics. And that's where I have my first quote unquote issue, because stretch is not necessarily very sustainable, is it?
If you want to build or grow your business in textile crafts, why don't you join our online community for the small monthly contribution of only 10 euros, which is basically $10-ish. You get to hang out, learn from, and share your business and your personal craft journey with all the lovely people there. Support the podcast at the same time, and you get everything wrapped into one loving package. I would love to welcome you there. Go to patternshift.fm and click community. And while you're there, sign up for our emails so you'll never miss a thing.
Alrighty, so the first thing that I was thinking of talking about when you invited me onto your podcast is basically what I consider to be the blueprint, which is pretty much, I think that's basically what you have landed on yourself. Like what you were saying is basically what I was saying. So when you start sewing, when you start anything, there's going to be mistakes. Not everything that you make is going to be great. It is going to be a complete success. You're going to get loads of use for it. Bear that in mind. That is a given. That's fine. You have to make mistakes. You have to learn from them. Very often, if you make a garment that doesn't quite work in some way, it's very often that you can either reuse the fabric somewhat or change it up in some way to get more use from it, and you can learn, and that is very, very valuable. So, but that's, having said that, that doesn't mean to say we can't from the very, very beginning try to have the aim of creating long-lasting, successful garments. So I bang on about this all the time in my podcast, but for me, I believe that we should be striving to make garments that fit our personal style, as you said, fit our body, as you've said, and fit our lifestyle, as you also said. So let's start with the first one. So personal style. I think we need to as well accept that what you make today and you're in love with today, or you find on the, you know, shop or online or something that you love right now, you're probably not going to feel just as passionately about it in 5 years' time. That is a given. People change, you change, tastes change, society changes, trends change, all of the above. So I think that we should definitely strive to make things that last a good amount of time, you know, and are going to get a lot of use. I think it's better to make something that you wear a ton for 3 years than something that you might have in your wardrobe for 15 years, but you wore maybe 5 times, you know, like that's not a good use of your time, the resources that went into that fabric, the energy and all of the above. So having accepted that tastes do change, we can still really strive to make things that really do fit with our personal style. And as we were discussing the last time that we spoke, if you're already a knitter, you're already used to making decisions that are kind of connected to your personal style. So you already probably, if you are a knitter or a crocheter, have a good idea, for example, what color palettes you enjoy, what sleeve lengths, the amount of volume you like in a garment, the amount of ease. So that you're used to making those kind of decisions. So you can transfer some of that knowledge to your sewing things. Obviously, we're talking about different types of garments. So you might never have had to really consider what collar shape you prefer, or, you know, something like that, or what kind of leg length you do like. You know, there's other things as well. But there is so many ways that you can kind of fast track your knowledge about what you really can, you know, to drill down really to what your personal style is. So I personally really enjoy using Pinterest, and also I'm quite a heavy Instagram user, so I'm often saving things that I really enjoy. So if you can't really name quite what exact type of things you like, if you just collate over a period of time things that really you love and really kind of click with you, when you go back and you look at them as a whole, you can really start to pick out aspects like, oh, seems to be that I'm really into like cowl necks, or I'm really into full sleeves, or whatever it could be, or oh, I'm clearly really into purple. You know, you can start to see those trends come through, so you don't have to be able to specify right now what it is. But also, you know, you've got a wardrobe of clothes, many of which you love, like see what you enjoy the most wearing, you know, just take a little snapshot of yourself every morning or something, see what, you know, what you reach for again and again. There's so many different ways you can do it. So that's personal style. So your lifestyle. So as, yeah, exactly. There's no point making something that is going to sit in your wardrobe for ages, because you just don't have the ability to wear it very much. So you really do need to factor in, do you work from home? Do you work outside? Do you go to fancy restaurants or go to parties? Do you have a kid? Do you have a baby? Are you on your knees a lot? Do you garden? You know, you really need to factor those things in. And it's not saying that necessarily you can't make things that fulfill those other functions, but I think generally you don't want to make too many. You know, like I'm not really a dress wearer. I've got one dress that I made about last year and I wear it quite a lot of times. I don't really need another because I just don't really enjoy wearing dresses. So I've got one, that's fine. I'm going to turn my attention to things that I do wear all the time, like dungarees and jeans and cardigans and things like that. But also, if there are elements that you really love in a design or in a pattern or something you've seen in the shop or something, there's often ways you can translate it so that you can wear it more often as well, you know. So for example, you've seen puff sleeves are really in at the moment. So say you like, you've seen a blouse and you've got this big, beautiful puff sleeve and you love that, but like you work from home or you do childcare, you could make a sweatshirt with a similar silhouette. There's lots of ways that you can translate those things that you enjoy into a fabric or a style or an overall garment that is more in keeping with your life, you know. Similarly, the other way around, like you might see something amazing, like some cute detail on a really casual garment, but you work in an office. Is there a way that you can translate that into something that's more formal, more appropriate for your office job, you know? So there's that. And then what was the last one? Your body. Now this, I think, is really the one that is the biggest learning curve. You're gonna have to do the work with this one a bit. So in terms of your body, I think disregard sizing in terms of shop bought sizing. Completely disregard that. Start to think of yourself purely as a collection of measurements, you know? So you might be like, oh, I'm always a size 14 in that shop. Like, that doesn't mean to say you're going to be a size 14 in a sewing pattern. You know, you have to let that go. And that's something that people fall down on all the time because they just didn't bother to measure themselves. And you kind of got to let go of the relationship that you might have with certain numbers. And you think like, oh, if it turns out you were an 18 in this sewing pattern, that's okay, because that's just a number.
It's just a number. Absolutely.
And it's not like, oh, you know, I've had this all the time, people making garments that are just way too small because I know I'm always this. And it's like, let go of that. It doesn't matter.
And do you want something that looks good on you because it has a good fit? Or do you want the number in your head to be right?
Absolutely. And it is completely irrelevant when it comes to sewing, because every sewing pattern company has their own block, their own standard measurings, their own kind of sample size, their own set of proportions that they work to. And some of those are going to really work for your body, but some of them, they're not going to work so well for your body, and you're going to have to do a bit of work to make it fit. Generally across the board, they are fairly consistent, but you will find that there are some variations, and that is fine.
Hi there, it's just me. I hope you are enjoying the interview. I just wanted to talk to you directly for a second. I've been recording the podcast for 2 years now, and I hope I've been giving you lots of value and some inspiration. If you are ready to give back, I have a few ways you can do that. You can go to www.ya-vol.com and subscribe to my newsletter. You can become an active member of our Ya-Vol online community and work at your sustainable wardrobe, or get mentoring for your small business in our BBBBC program. And if you want to support more anonymously in the background, you can do that by becoming a patron of the show for the value of one cup of coffee each month. It's just a small thank you, and it makes it possible for me to continue to talk to interesting people and share their secrets with you. Go to www.ya-vol.com and find everything you need there. Thanks.
So beyond that, so always, always, always measure yourself before you start any project, because unless you're making something incredibly stretchy, you don't have the amount of give that you might be used to having if you are a knitter.
Yeah.
So, and also we fluctuate as well, you know, so what you are 1 week might be different. So always, always, always measure yourself before you start a project. If you want to do your full bust, your high waist, which is like your natural waist, and your kind of full hip, which is kind of the widest part around your bum hip area. They are just your basics. There are a million other measurements you can take, obviously, like the length of your torso, the length of your arm, your high bust. There's loads and loads of others, but those three basic ones are a really good starting point to at least figure out what size or sizes you need to start with. Yeah, so it's so common for people to find that they're in a number of sizes. I certainly am. I'm always a size bigger on my waist and hips than I am on my bust.
Yeah, same.
So normal, so normal. So that's really good to know. So
as a beginner, if I can just quickly grab onto this
please,
one.
Please do.
I know that the same as you, I'm a size smaller on top than I'm on the bottom. So as a beginner, talking about that journey where you learn as you do you think it's wise to already start learning to change patterns to fit your particular size, or to just go with the bigger size?
No, absolutely. Start to make those changes from the beginning. They're not difficult. They're okay. Really not difficult. That is, it's very doable.
Yeah, you don't need to really go into this, but it's just really a good thing to know.
Because it won't fit you up here.
Right.
Always, if anything, start with the smaller size, because this around your shoulders, around your torso, around, you know, this upper bit is very hard to fit and alter if it's too big, then, you know, changing a pattern just to blend out into the next size. So you always want to start with what's fitting you around the top, and then you can blend out into the larger size Or the other way, some people are the other way. They've got very narrow hips or, you know, no waist. So, but always get it fitting up here. Get it fitting up here, because it's always easier to go in or out, correct things going on down below.
That makes sense. Yes.
Yes. So if you end up with like a gaping neckline and stuff, you're just not going to want to wear it. It's going to feel wrong. And so you're never going to reach for it. So yeah, it's great. And the more that you learn about your body and the things that you need to do for your specific body, I think we discussed this before, I think, didn't we? Like by WhatsApp, like there are hundreds of different alterations you can make that you may need to make.
Yeah.
And once you learn the few that apply to you, you get so quick at them, so good at them, you can apply them to any single core pattern that you see and you can make it work for yourself, you know?
I haven't thought of it that way. That's super helpful. And so this is talking about the shape that you are and getting to know your body and letting go of sizes and just focusing on the numbers, which is not a number, is not a judgment.
No.
And I think
something you could do even to kind of flip the script on that.
Yeah.
Most garment companies have a size chart that is in both metric and imperial.
Oh, yes.
Something that you could, like, I generally work, you know, when I'm taking my body measurements, I've got so used to doing it in imperial, but you could swap it. Like if you're so hung up on certain sizes in whatever your preferred measurement is, start using the other one, because it means nothing to you then. It literally is just a number.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah. Personally, I never had issues with that. I always feel much better if I have a garment that fits well. Absolutely. And I don't look at the size, but I know a lot of women or female identifying people that I know do really have that issue. Yeah. But at the same time, this whole journey could prove to be very supportive in the way that you look at yourself and finding ways to really look at your best features, the things that you feel really proud of, and bring them to the stage.
Absolutely. So for example, because I, like yourself, as we're saying, I've always been a little bit smaller on top than I have been below. So I've always found semi-fitted things to like really cling to my tummy.
Yes.
In a way that I've really felt self-conscious about it. I mean, I'm not a big person, but I've always felt self-conscious of my tummy. I've naturally got a little round tummy, and I've had it even when I was at my absolute thinnest in my 20s.
It's just your body.
Just my body. And I always hated it. And I hated on my belly for years because it was always kind of showing, because what fitted up here was too clingy here. And now I can do that really simple alteration of blending between the sizes. It's not creating this tightness and this focus on my tummy. So I don't think about it, because I'm not, things aren't cutting in. It's not on display in the same way. So it's freed up a lot of brain space like that.
Yeah, yeah. And then I also use a lot of Pinterest, and also really helps to look at, if I look at different shapes or styles, I always have to add plus size, because it just looks different on a plus size body. And not all plus size bodies are the same bodies, or fat bodies. I'd like to say fat myself. But I do have a lot of inspiration from my sewing teacher, who is a lot thinner than I am, or a lot smaller, or whatever you want to call it. But she has the same kind of shape, like the proportions are same-ish.
Yeah.
So, and she's an expert sewer. So I can look at her and see how certain garments look so good on her, things that I would never have thought to make myself. So now I've made some flared pants, and I always thought that, like, these rules and restrictions that we keep telling each other, like, you should have elongated lines because that looks better, or never wear stripes across your chest because that makes your chest look bigger. And then there's somebody that says, that's not true. Or you can't wear yellow because nobody can wear yellow. And all of these rules you can put to the side if you try them out, and then you can say, yes, they were right. I don't feel good in bright yellow. Or actually, these flare jeans make me look very Morticia-like. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And something you can do as well, if you're not sure about whether or not something's going to suit you, try something.
I love that. Suit you is a much better way of putting it. Sorry for
no problem.
People talk about flattering. I don't like that word much. Suit you is so much better. I'm going to write it down and use this one from now on.
And okay. It's so subjective as well.
Yes, absolutely.
I hate that. Yeah, flattering. What people deem flattering. That sounds like it's like a rule. It's external. It's not about like how you feel.
Exactly.
Yeah. One thing about that is, because I mean, it does take a lot of time and energy and resources to make a garment, but a way that you can see if something is going to suit you is to try something similar in the shop. Like, I don't do this very much. I probably should do this more. But, you know, say there's like a new kind of neckline that's come out or a collar and you're like, I don't know if that's going to suit me. Like, try something on, like, see, before you invest all that time and energy and fabric into it. But yeah, so I'm just going to wrap up the point that I was making about fit. Garments you make that are going to be more of a teaching exercise than a successful garment, but you will learn so much more about your body going forward. So making a toile, that is something that can really help, although it from the outside, it seems like an unsustainable thing. Like, why are you making like a test garment? Isn't that a waste of fabric? But I really don't believe it is, because generally you're going to be making a toile out of, like, you can often use fabrics that are from a charity shop or bed linen that you've got around the house that's got holes in or something. You can often reuse something. But ultimately, I think if it's going to be saving precious fabric by, you know, figuring out any fit issues in advance, I do think that's a better way to go, because then it's going to be a better experience for you as well. You know, if you've got a garment that fits you well from the beginning because you bothered to make the toile, aka muslin, it doesn't have to be the full bells and whistles. It doesn't have to be the complete garment. It can just be like the significant parts. You know, you don't have to do the pockets on the trousers, for example, or, you know, if you're testing the bodice of a dress, you don't have to add the sleeves unless that's something you want to test as well, you know. So you can pair things back and make it a quicker thing.
Yeah. I've made two toiles so far, both for trousers. And one is now, it's made from a duvet cover and is now my pajama pants.
Fantastic.
I love them. They have a lot of space around the tummy. So if I wanted to make them into an actual go outside pair, I'd have to do some work around the tummy. And then a neighbor gave me a bunch of fabric that she didn't use, and I used that for another pair. I thought I was going to make it an inside pair, but it's actually pretty cool. So I've worn it outside. And I think I felt like that. I felt like it was so silly to like double the things while you're trying to actually make less. But it does make sense. And it does connect to a question that I have.
If you'd spent loads of money on some beautiful organic cotton, whatever,
yeah,
and the right pair straight away, that would be a waste.
Yes.
Wouldn't it?
If you mess it up, yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure to do it right on the first.
And not every garment can be turned into pajamas, you know, like if you're making a coat or whatever, you need to write that off as like that.
Yeah, I see that.
Once you find the specific alterations, you know, if you've got like square shoulders, sloping shoulders, forward sits, slanting shoulders, if you've got like super long arms, or if you've got, you know, like a full bicep, there's so many different adjustments you can do, you know, like short torso, long torso, full tummy adjustment, flat seat adjustment, full seat adjustment, not knee adjustment, you know.
Okay, getting hot now.
I know, but you don't have to address them all, but not all are relevant for the particular garment that you're making, but just be aware, just kind of learn about these things. If there's so much help and advice online, you might find that you only have a couple of these things, but even if you do going forward, make a couple of adjustments to the things that you make, the fit will be vastly improved. You'll feel so much better in it.
Yeah.
And it will look better.
Yeah. Oh, this is amazing, amazing, amazing. Great tips. But what if going into a little bit more of the more sustainable way of doing? But I have one question that really links to what you just said. So I'm not the type to have a capsule wardrobe. I would love to. I love the idea, less stuff, buy better garments that last longer or make better garments, but not a lot. I don't need a lot, but I just need the variation. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of struggling. My idea was, what if I could just have a good pair of pants, a good blouse, a good dress, and then just do variations on them? That feels like it's a really solid way to go. But I can also see in the sewing world that there's trends and lots of different things coming up. Do you have any ideas around that? Should I just work on this basic
pattern set that is made to measure for me, and then I change up the materials and maybe do a different neckline and stuff. Is that a smart way of doing things?
Only if you ever always want to wear the same like woven top or the same
right
particular kind of fit of trouser. Like, I think that that if you literally do, like, that's great, that's a good way to go. But I feel that that would be quite restrictive. Like, why yeah would you restrict yourself in that way? I feel
I don't know why I asked, because I don't think I've ever knit the same sweater
yeah
twice.
Yeah. So if you know those few little adjustments that you need, you know how to get a pretty good fit of any pattern, then you are free to literally, the world is your oyster. Yeah. Everything, yeah, you know, everything is an option. If you're like, oh, you know, because you might, you know, okay, I've got this well-fitting trouser block, great. But if you see something super cool, and
yeah,
that's going to be, it's going to, as well, like pattern cutting and pattern drafting and pattern alteration is kind of an art. And it takes a lot of kind of study to get really good at it and to be very successful at it quickly. Otherwise, there's a lot of making twirls, going back to your pattern, making another twirl, going back to your pattern, making it. That's what fashion designers do. That's what fashion yes houses do. They yeah make these alterations and they do it, you know, professionally. And you can do that. I mean, please do, like, mess with your patterns all you want, but know that that's not really that quick. If you do want to make a version that you of something you've seen, and you have to go back to your basic block that is actually really different to the thing.
I think it's when I hear you talk about it, it's not all that different from knitting, because what I do, I you kind of fall in love with a pattern that you see somewhere. You decide you want to make that pattern. If you are not fully equipped as a designer yet, or don't want to put in the effort like myself, I just want to follow like a set of rules that ends up looking like something that is on the picture.
Yeah.
But as I start doing it, I'm like, I am thinking, I actually like a 3/4 sleeve length, and that's pretty easy to adjust. And I guess you can do that in a sewing pattern as well. Like, some things are pretty easy to adjust. And then by doing multiple different patterns along a period of time, that's when you learn more and more and more and get to, yeah, it does, it makes a lot of sense now. It's so interesting though, isn't it, that it's really helpful for you to kind of sketch that blueprint, that outline, because I already know a lot of this.
Absolutely.
But I didn't know I knew it.
Yeah.
And also now at the same time, I know that I don't know that much yet, but that's okay.
Absolutely. It's a journey.
Yes. Yeah, it's a journey. Right. Talking about the fabrics, can we start with the stretchy stuff? Because okay, I do want to make my own leggings and my own t-shirts. And I know that stretch and elastic things are not so sustainable. So
this comes back to like my whole basic point of like the most sustainable garment or the most sustainable fabric is the one that A, really suits the project that you're working on and you wear a ton. Like, yes, if you make a garment that is, yes, it's organic cotton, it was grown here, it was hand dyed, it was this and that, but A, it's not suitable for your pattern, that's a dud, that's a waste of every single resource. Or you don't like it, you don't like the feel of it, or it's unsuitable for your climate or what have you, then that's a dud. You know, making something that doesn't get worn is not sustainable.
Right.
There's just no way, no matter how it came to be, you know, the materials came to be. Making something out of a fabric, yeah, obviously some things are more sustainable than others. Yeah, stretch fabric has got elastane / lycra / spandex in it, which, yeah, it will release microplastics when it's washed. And ultimately, when it ends up degrading, it won't biodegrade in the same way that cotton or linen or wool would. But if you're going to wear it a ton and you're going to care for it and it's suitable for what you need, then just accept that, you know, just accept it. And yeah, like, you could make a pair of jeans that are 100% cotton, but if the style you really want and that you feel suits you is like a more kind of tighter fitting skinny style, that 100% cotton is not going to work, and it's going to feel awful, and they're going to sit there unworn. Whereas if you did get some that had maybe like 3% elastane and it gives you that wearing ease and you want to wear them all the time, that's got to be better shortly.
Yeah, definitely. But is there a way, because usually it's 5%, but the percentage can be more or less, and that's
It's the, I mean, you can get stretch denim that is like 5%, or you can get denim that's got, it's called wearing ease, and it's like a smaller percentage.
And surely some fabrics are more stretchy than others, just from the way they're woven or knit?
Not so much. So stretch comes in two forms. There is fibre stretch, so things like spandex, elastane, what have you, and there is mechanical stretch, and that is whether or not it's been woven or knitted. Generally, there's not so much variation in the knitted fabric production. There is some, obviously, but the main categories are fairly limited. So you've got like single jersey, which is, you know, if you look at it under a microscope, it would look like tiny kind of plain and pearl.
Yeah, isn't it?
You know, yeah. And that's what you generally have for like a t-shirt, like a classic t-shirt. You can get double knit, which is thicker. Ponte Roma is a very popular and commonly found fabric in this kind of double knit category. And that is literally it's two layers that are knitted together. That's good for kind of more like tunics or like thin cardigans. It's just got a bit more body. Interlock, that's similar. It's just a bit thicker than jersey. Works in a similar way. You've got sweatshirt fabric, also known as sweatshirt fleece. You've got French terry or loopback terry, which is very similar to sweatshirt fleece on the outside, but on the back, instead of it being brushed, it's little loops, but they behave in a very similar way. And they're
like towels.
Yeah. They're virtually interchangeable in terms of what projects you would use them for. I think they're the main categories, really. And I just think finding a suitable fabric for the thing that you're making, making sure it's the right thickness, and making sure it's got the right amount of stretch. Certain sewing patterns that really require a lot of stretch, they will indicate how much percentage stretch you need. Okay. So, for example, a close-fitting, perhaps like the t-shirt that you're wearing now.
Yes.
It might say in the pattern instructions, choose a fabric that has 50% horizontal stretch. So that would be what you would do is you would find your fabric, either it's in your stash or it's in the shop or whatever. Or it might actually say listed if you're buying something online, or you could always email them and ask them how much percentage stretch does fabric have. So what you do, you take like a 10, like it's a bit like a knitting gauge. Knitting. You would find a section, not at the edge, that is about 10 centimeters long, and against a ruler, you literally stretch it as far as it comfortably goes. And then if it goes as far as 15 centimeters, you know that that's got 50% stretch.
Gotcha.
The other thing you need to think about in terms of stretch and suitability for a project, as well as like the kind of stretchiness in that way, is whether or not it's two-way stretch, which is it stretches widthways, or four-way stretch, is that it stretches widthways and lengthways. So if you're creating leggings, you really need to make sure you've got a fabric that stretches both widthways and lengthways, because you won't be able to sit down.
Right.
And that the lengthway stretch is as much as the widthway stretch. You see what I mean? Because
yes,
some fabrics, they are kind of technically they're a four-way stretch. They can stretch in both directions, but they don't stretch as much. So you just need to check.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. And with leggings, because my thighs chafe, there's always a lot of wear and tear there. And they kind of grow a little, so I can sew them back closed. And I do that two or three times, but after a while, that's gone. Is there any way that with patterns for specifically leggings, there's some sort of an extra, I don't know, gusset or something that makes it more wearable, or a kind of fabric that lasts longer and is as stretchy?
Sure.
Any ideas?
Sure. Yeah. So you really want to look for a really good quality jersey fabric that has got a good weight to it. You don't want to get the really thin stuff. Something that is a bit more solid. It's still got the stretch. It's got a really good, you know, stretch and recovery, we call it. Not just it stretches and it kind of stays. Stretch and recovery.
Yes.
But I'm sure there must be some sewing patterns that have already that factored in. Otherwise, there's nothing for stopping you from creating, if not a gusset, then almost like a double layer.
Double layer, yeah. This t-shirt has a double layer as well on the front, yeah, for some reason. But probably because it stays in shape better that way.
Yeah, the necklace, it'd be, yes, as well for forming that neckline without needing a band. There are a couple of pattern companies that specifically create patterns for plus sized bodies. So there's Cashmerette, I'll send you these links.
Yes. And
I don't know how you pronounce it, Muna and Broad, M-U-N-A and Broad.
Mm-hmm.
They have some fantastic patterns. What is really good as well is doing a full bust adjustment is a very common thing that some like plus sized women and female identifying people have to do. So some of those patterns, I think all of the Cashmerette patterns that have a top half anyway, have a couple of bodice versions already. So you can already use the cup size that's most appropriate for you.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. But
they also have, for some of their dresses and I think their jeans and their skirts, they have like an apple shape version and a pear shape version.
Oh, nice.
Inbuilt. So if you are kind of more apple shaped, you don't have to do a lot of those adjustments already. They're already done for you.
Mm.
They're a couple of really good pattern companies to check out.
Awesome. Lots that I've already learned. And how about, because I love wearing jeans, which is a problem.
It's not a problem. Cashmerette have an amazing pair of jeans pattern called the Ames jeans, A-M-E-S. That would be potentially a good place to start.
Mm-hmm. And how about fabric? Because that's where I feel it's the problem. It's the least sustainable option in terms of fabrics.
You can sometimes get denim that has got a bit of stretch in it, but it's also made of recycled cotton fibers. So
yeah,
there are some ways that you can kind of factor in a slightly more sustainable. Yeah.
Because
like if you're choosing a fabric that has the same behavior and the same weight as another fabric, that they will be interchangeable, you know. So it might,
yes,
might be a jeans pattern for 100% cotton denim. But if you've, yeah, got 100% cotton twill, but it behaves in the same way, it's the same weight, that's interchangeable, you know.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah,
denim as such.
Yeah, yeah. And for gathering sustainable fabric, so the big points that we've made so far is the right pattern with the right fabric, so you wear it a long time. If it is what you need, and if you wear it a long time, don't get hung up about the quote unquote details, because you will be wearing it a lot. But what if I wanted to buy sustainable fabric? Because okay, for me, I don't mind investing, because the cost per wear, I feel like it's a good thing to invest
there. Okay, so first of all, there is no such thing as sustainable fabric.
Right, more sustainable
fabric.
Yes,
anything that is like virgin, anything that has been freshly manufactured is not sustainable. Like you,
no.
The thing is about fabric, there are so many factors that goes into its like the fiber growth, harvesting, manufacture, processing, dyeing, carding, weaving, finishing, to its transportation.
Transportation, yeah.
To its whether or not it'll biodegrade, its lifespan. There are so many factors involved in that. There is no way that you can pick one fabric or one fiber that ticks every single box.
No, no.
In the most sustainable way.
Yeah.
So you kind of, I mean, beyond finding something that is suitable for your pattern or your project and that you want to wear, beyond that, I think you kind of have to choose what's most important to you, you know? So personally, for me, I avoid polyester, I avoid acrylic, I avoid man-made fibers, because for me, knowing that they will not biodegrade, knowing that every time I wash them, they'll be really releasing microplastics into the water system. For me, that is something that I really dislike. So yeah, for me, I have in the past, but now, apart from if I'm buying something with a bit of stretching for wearing ease, I try to avoid that. That was my choice. There are some ways that you can make sure that you're ticking more of those boxes. For example, if you can find GOTS certified, so GOTS certification is a way of making sure you are ticking a lot of boxes. Like it definitely will be organic. Like it has to jump, the manufacturers have to jump through so many hoops to prove that it is organic. It's not been contaminated with anything else. Also, what I really like about the GOTS certification is it actually factors in a lot of the kind of human aspects as well.
Yeah,
So it will guarantee that the workers are working in a kind of safe environment, and I think even be that they have to be paid a certain amount. I can't remember. You can check the details on the website, but it's got that kind of human element as well. So we know that it's kind of fair trade in that sense. There's also, they have to prove that there is no chemical runoff into local waterways. So all the water has to be properly processed before it can leave the facility, which I think is really good. So that is one way to make sure that you are ticking a lot of boxes. But still, it's grown in one country. It's probably processed in another country. It's probably died in another country. It might have ticked all these boxes, but it's still traveled around the world many, many times. It's been transported, you know, with fossil fuels back and forth. So this is why I say there's no such thing as sustainable.
Right. Yes. And swapping and secondhand is also a way of finding it, I guess, as the same way as with yarn.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, what the most sustainable thing is, thing that already exists.
Yes.
If you're new to sewing, you probably don't have your own fabric stash yet, but there's a lot of people out there that do. So one way of finding fabric that you can feel a bit better about is by shopping destash sales. Mm-hmm. So either online, on Instagram or eBay or Etsy, if you type in like the kind of fabric you're looking for and destash, you might find something coming up like that. Yeah.
We have a marketplace in our community as well.
That's fantastic. I love that. That's it. Yeah. Some places, some like actual locations do have like, you know, sewing groups, or there's some bigger businesses and charities and stuff that also kind of rescue fabric from landfill. Mm. Like there's Fab Scrap in Philadelphia and in New York, for example, in the US. I know that there's one in New Zealand. The frustrating thing with that, though, obviously, is you can't think, I want 3 meters of that. It's been cut. You know, like you can say, I really want some, I need like 10 balls of that. Oh, she's only got 8 or something. Yeah. You know?
Yes, that's true. But you can, I think what I tend to do, I don't have a huge fabric stash. I have some. I look at my stash first. And next thing I do is I have an online small business that specializes in organic, more sustainable type of fabric. So I look there first. And I've taught myself to choose from what's offered in a certain container so that I now never look at the picture and go, I want exactly that, because that is very hard to get to when you want to tick the boxes. So I try to choose from what's offered within my kind of value system. And with these pants that I'm wearing, the black corduroy flare pants, it wasn't a sustainable fabric. I got it from my teacher, but I'm going to get a lot of wear out of this. And now I feel a lot better about it, because there was not a better choice for me at that moment, and even beyond the moment. So thanks a lot for clearing that up. And also thanks a lot for having so many wonderful tips. I think we've gone through most of the questions I have at the moment, at like halfway on my sewing journey, my more sustainable and more conscious sewing journey. So thank you so much. If at any time I want more information, I know where you are. You can become a returning guest.
I'll be in my lounge.
Yes. Thanks so much, Zoe.
You are so welcome. It's been really fun. Thank you for having me.
So that was super helpful. I think I was on the right track, but it's always amazing to know that you are. When you listen to this and you have some questions, you can do different things. You can go to the show notes to www.ja-wol.com. And there on the right-hand side of the show notes, you'll see a button you can click and you can leave a voice message. This is so much easier than writing an email, but you can also write an email at info@ja-wol.com and just ask me or Zoe a question. I'll move them forward to Zoe, and who knows, we'll do another episode or a Q&A. Just keep the conversation going and we'll help you figure things out. Don't forget to listen to Zoe's podcast, Check Your Threads, and find the information on checkyourthread.com. She's also on Instagram, and she's very experienced, fun, and just a lovely, inspiring person. So go and check out her work as well. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode, and I hope it was helpful for you. Bye.
A Smaller Life is Yevol's completely free way for makers and sellers to learn how to be part of a healthier take on clothes and fashion. Yevol offers an online community where they can connect and inspire each other, monthly topics with challenges for makers, and coaching and support for sellers. We will move the needle. For more information, go to ja-wol.com. Yevol!